approach. I move in deeper, allowing that darkness to pull me onward. When I am far into the trees, the shadows grow thick. A voice calls out to me. No, not one voice. Many, speaking as one.
Welcome to the waiting place, Lyre of Sarah.
The voices purr.
Welcome to our home and our prison. Come closer, won't you?
Chapter 37, Elias. The masks don't notice the darts until my first victim is face down in his rice. They are complacent. Their scouts have told them that the tribespeople will be an easy conquest, and so they posted no guards, too confident in their own skill. Which is formidable, but it's not enough. The first mask to spot me knocks the two darts I send at him out of the air and rushes me, blades appearing in his hands like magic. But a darkness stirs within me, magic of my own. Though I am far from the waiting place, I have just enough physical magic to spin into a windwalk until I am behind him, and I can stick him with another dart. Two of the masks leap toward me, weapons flying, while the third, the commander, lunges for the door to raise the alarm. I windwalk in front of him, using the infinitesimal moment of his surprise to jam a blade into his throat. Don't think, just move, Elias. Blood spurts all over my hands, making it exceedingly difficult not to dwell on the violence of my actions. But the other masks approach, and this man's body makes an adequate shield, jerking as the blades of his comrades glance off his armor. I shove him at one of the remaining masks and take on the other, ducking as he throws a punch, and only just avoiding his knee as he tries to nail me in the jaw with it. He has an open patch in his armor just above his wrist, and I grab it, stabbing him with the last of Afia's darts before he tackles me to the ground. Seconds later, his prone body is dragged off me, and the last mask has me by the throat.
You are mortal.
Shaver reminded me of that fact before the Nightbringer murdered her. If I die here, the waiting place will have no guardian. The knowledge gives me the strength to knee the mask in the groin and wrench away from him. I rip his knife from a scabbard and stab him in the chest once, twice, thrice, before drawing the blade across his throat. The tent, which has been a whirlwind of activity, is suddenly still, other than the harsh draw of my breath. Outside, the voices of soldiers rise and fall in laughter and complaint, the din of the camp masking the ruckus of my attack. Someone in the marshal camp will discover the masks soon enough, so I slip out the way I came, making for the edge of the camp, where I steal a horse. By the time the first alarm sounds, I'm well away and heading west, toward the closest drum tower. I make quick work of the legionnaires standing guard out front. One of them is mid-complaint when I shoot an arrow into his chest, and the other only realizes what is happening once he has a sim poking out of his throat. The killing comes easier now, and I'm halfway up the stairs of the tower, almost to the sleeping quarters, before a better part of me cries out, "They didn't deserve death! They didn't do anything to you!" The final man in the tower is the head drummer, and he sits on the top floor, beside a drum as wide as he is tall, his ear trained toward another drum tower in the north. He transcribes whatever he hears on long scrolls, so engrossed in his work that he doesn't hear me. But by now, I'm far too tired to sneak, and I need him frightened. So I simply appear in the doorway, a nightmare spectacle covered in dried gore, with unsheathed weapons stained with blood. "Get up," I say calmly. "Walk to the drum."
I...
He glances over the top of the tower to the door below, to the guard post. "They're dead." I gesture with a bloody hand. "In case you couldn't tell. Move." He picks up his sticks, though fear makes him drop them twice. I'd like you to drum something out for me. I get closer and raise one of my Telemann Sims. And if you change it, even one bit, I will know.
If I drum a false message, my commander will... he'll kill me.
Is your commander a tall, pale-skinned mask with a blonde beard and a scar running down his chin to his neck? At the drummer's nod, I reassure him. He's dead. And if you don't drum a false message, I'll gut you and throw you over the tower. Your choice. The message orders the Legion preparing to attack the tribes back to a garrison 40 miles from here, and demands the order be carried out immediately. After the drummer is finished, I kill him. He had to have known it was coming, but still, I can't look him in the eyes as I do it. My armor is disgusting, and I cannot bear the stench, so I shed it, steal clothes from the storeroom, and turn back to the waiting place. The closer I get, the more relieved I feel. The tribes should have many hours before the marshals realize that the message they were given is false. My family will escape the Empire. And at last, I have the understanding I need to pass the ghosts through, to begin restoring the balance. It's about bleeding time. My first clue that something is wrong, deeply wrong, comes when I approach the border wall. It should be high and gold, shimmering with power. Instead, it appears wan, almost patchy. I think to fix it, but the moment I am past the tree line, the ghost's pain blasts into me, a barrage of memory and confusion. I make myself remember not why I killed all those marshals, but how it felt, the way it deadened me. I push the tribes and Mamie and Arborit from my mind. Ma'atha rises now, tentative. I call to the closest ghost, who drifts forward. Welcome to the waiting place, the realm of ghosts, I say to him. I am the soul catcher, and I am here to help you cross to the other side.
I am dead?
The ghost whispers.
I thought this was a dream.
The magic gives me an awareness of the ghosts that I did not have before, an insight into their lives, their needs. After a moment, I understand that this spirit needs forgiveness. But how do I offer it? How did Shaver do so, and so quickly, with nothing but a thought? The conundrum gives me pause, and at that exact moment, the ghost's howling reaches a nadir. Quite suddenly, I'm aware of something strange. A shift in the forest. The land feels different. It is different. After consulting the map in my head, I realize why. Someone's here. Someone who shouldn't be here. And whoever it is has found their way to the gin grove.
Chapter 38. The Bloodshrike. I am hunched at my desk, deep in thought, when I feel a hand on my shoulder, a hand I nearly take off with the blade that jumps into my hand, until I recognize Harper's sea-green eyes. "Don't do that again," I snarl at him, "unless you want to lose an appendage." The mess of pages on my desk tells of days spent obsessively poring over Alistair's reports. I stand and my head spins. I might have missed a meal, or three. What time is it?
Third bell before dawn, Shrike. Forgive me for disturbing you. Dex just sent a message.
About time. It's been nearly 4 days since we heard anything, and I was starting to wonder if some misfortune had befallen my friend. I hold the parchment to the lamp in Harper's hand. That is when I realize that he's shirtless and disheveled, every muscle in his body tense. His mouth is thin, and the calm that usually emanates from him is absent.
What the hell's is wrong?
Just read it.
Corican force of nearly 50,000 gathering in the Umbral Pass, led by Grimar. Call up the legions. They are coming for Antium.
There's something else, Shrike.
Avatar says. I tried to decode the letter we found on Alistair, but she used disappearing ink. The only thing left by the time I got to it was the sign-off. She. Caris Futuria. Avatos nods, and I want to scream. That traitorous bitch, I snarl. She must have been meeting with Karkins when she was at the roost. Where the bleeding hells is Corporal Favorous? Found him dead in his quarters. No wounds on him. Poison. Caris had one of her assassins take him out, just like she had someone murder Captain Alistair. Knowing how badly she wants to be Empress, her intentions now are obvious. She didn't want us to know of Grammar's approach. She wanted Emperor Marcus and me to look like fools, dangerous, incompetent fools. So what if a blood-hungry warlock lays siege to Antium? She knows that with reinforcements we can destroy the Corkins, though holding off a force of 50,000 men will take its toll. Worse, she'll use the chaos created by a siege to destroy Marcus, Livia, and me. She'll beat back the Corkins, be hailed as a hero, and get what she always wanted. What the Nightbringer has no doubt promised her. The throne. And I cannot prove any of it. Even if I know, in my very bones, that this is her intent. It did not have to be this way, Bloodshrike. Remember that. Before the end. We need to tell the Emperor, I say. And somehow I need to convince him to get Livia out of the city. If Grammar's force is coming here, there is no more dangerous a place for her. Antium will be chaos, and Caris thrives in chaos. We are armed and locked in Emperor Marcus's war room within the hour. Runners fan out across the city, bringing in the Empire's generals, many of whom are also paters of their gens. A dozen maps are brought in, each laying out different sections of the terrain to the north. Why didn't we know about this? Asks General Crispin Rufius, the head of Gens Rufia, as he circles the room, cunning as a vulture. Marcus threw Crispin's brother over Cardium Rock months ago. I don't expect his support. Reports come in every day from these garrisons. If something was out of the ordinary, there are a dozen people who should have caught it. Marcus tilts his head, as if listening to something the rest of us cannot hear. The paters exchange a glance, and I try not to curse. Now is not the time for our emperor to start chatting with his dead brother. He mutters something, then nods. But when he does finally speak, he sounds perfectly calm. The reports were manipulated, Marcus says, by someone who values their own interests over the Empire, no doubt. The implication is obvious. And even though I've no indication that Rufius is in any way involved in changing the reports, the rest of the men in the room look at him suspiciously. His face turns red. I am merely saying that this is highly irregular. It's done. I speak, a hand on my sim, so that he remembers I lured his brother and the paters of other allied gens into Villa Aquila, trapped them, and had them taken at sim point to Cardium Rock to die. Now we reap the consequences. Whoever planned this wants the Empire weak. There is no greater weakness than infighting. You can continue to discuss why we didn't know about the Karkin attack, or you can help us stop the bastards. The room is silent, and Marcus, taking advantage of the moment, taps Umbral Pass north of Antium. Grimmar gathers his men just north of the pass, he says. From there, it's a 4-day ride to Antium on a swift horse. 2 weeks for an army. For hours we argue. Antium has 6 legions, 30,000 men, guarding it. One general wants to send a legion out to stop Grimmar before he reaches the city. The captain of the city guard, my cousin Baristus Aquilus, volunteers to lead a smaller force. I pace in irritation. Every minute we don't make a decision is another minute that the Commandant gets closer to Antium, another minute that my sisters' and nephews' lives are in danger from both Caris and the Corkins. As the paters press Marcus, I expect his volatility to show. I wait for him to acknowledge the voice he hears. But for once, he appears his old self,
as if the threat of war has brought back the cunning foe who plagued Elias and me during our years at Blackcliff. By dawn, the generals have departed with new orders, to get the legions armed and ready to fight, and to shore up Antium's defences. The drums thunder ceaselessly, demanding aid from the governors of Selous and Estium. Meanwhile, Marcus calls up reserve soldiers, but he needn't have bothered. Antium's citizens are marshals through and through. Grimmar and his men savaged our port. At the news of another attack, hundreds of young men and women arrive at barracks across the city, volunteering for duty, hungry for revenge. My lord, I take the Emperor aside after the others leave. I wish there were a better time, but no one knows Marcus's mood from one moment to the next. And right now, he seems as sane as he's ever been. There's the matter of your wife and heir. Marcus's whole body goes still. He's listening to the voice that speaks to him, to Zack's ghost. I send a silent plea to the spirit to make our Emperor see reason. What of them? He says. If there is a siege, this is the last place you'll want them to be. The Grain Moon is less than a month away. Livia is due then. I advise that you get her to safety, ideally in Selous or Estium.
No.
It's not just the siege that threatens, I say. Caris will be here within days. She's already made one attempt on the Empress's life. She's angry. She will make another. We must thwart her before that happens. If she doesn't know where Livy and your heir are, then she cannot hurt them.
If I send my wife and unborn child out of Antium, people will think I fear those fur-wearing, woad-faced bastards.
He doesn't lift his attention from the map before him, but every muscle in his body is bunched. He holds his temper by a thread.
The child should be born in Antium, in the Emperor's palace, with witnesses, so there are no questions of his parentage.
We could do it quietly, I say, desperation creeping into my voice. I must secure a regency. I must not let any more harm come to my baby sister. I failed enough on that score. No one has to know she's gone. The city will be preparing for war. The paters won't notice.
You're suddenly very interested in the survival of my dynasty.
Livia is the only sibling I have left, I say. I don't want her to die. As for your dynasty, I am your Bloodshrike. I will not insult your intelligence by claiming to like you, my lord. I find you difficult. But my fate and my sister's are tied to yours, and if your line fails, we both die. Please, get Livia and the child to safety. I take a deep breath. I think it's what he would want. I don't say Zacharias's name. Mentioning him is either brilliant or unforgivably stupid. Marcus finally looks up from the map. His jaw clenches, his fists bunch. I brace for the blow. But then he hisses through his teeth, as if in sudden pain.
Send her to my family, he says. My parents are in Selous. No one is to know, especially not the bitch of Blackcliff. If anything happens to my heir because of this shrike, it will be your head on a pike. After she's gone, I want you back here. You and I have something we need to do.
Clouds threaten on the horizon, heavy and low. I smell the storm approaching. Livy needs to get on the road before it hits. Faris has men positioned along the entire street, and as far as they know, the Empress is leaving to visit an ailing aunt on the outskirts of the city. The carriage will return with another woman dressed as Livy by nightfall.
Raelius and I can handle it, Shrike.
Faris looks askance at the black guard waiting at the end of the road, a dozen hand-picked, hardened warriors. You are travelling with my only sister and the heir of the Empire, I say. I could send a legion with you and it wouldn't be enough.
This is ridiculous, Livia says, as I bundle her into the carriage.
The first raindrops begin to fall.
We will hold the city. You will hold the city.
The Karkans are coming, yes, I say, but Caris is too.
We nearly lost you once because I wasn't wary enough of her. The only reason you're still alive. I know. My sister's voice is soft. She has not asked me about the healing, about why I never healed her before. Perhaps she knows I do not wish to speak of it. We cannot risk it. I harden myself. We cannot risk the future of the Empire. Go, watch your back. Trust Faris and Raelius and no one else. When it's safe again, I'll send for you. I won't go. Livia grabs my hand. I will not leave you here. I think of my father, his sternness. I am Mater of Gens Aquila now, and it is the future of the Gens, the future of my people, that I must protect. You will go. I pull my fingers from her grip. Thunder rumbles, closer than I thought it would be. You will remain hidden, and you will do it with the grace with which you have done everything else, Empress Livia Aquila Farrar. Loyal to the end. Say it. My sister bites her lip, her pale eyes glowing with anger. But then she nods, as I knew she would. Loyal to the end, she says. By the time the storm has broken over Antium, Livia is well away from the capital. But my relief is short-lived. You and I have something we need to do. I will not soon forget the abuse that Marcus inflicted on Livia. I think back to a year ago, during the trials, to the nightmares that plagued me of Marcus as emperor and me doing his bidding. What does he have planned for me now?
Chapter 39 Liar. My blood transforms to lead at the sound of the djinn and their strange, layered voice. It throbs with cunning and rage. But beneath it flows a river of almost imperceptible sorrow, just like with the Nightbringer. Where is Elias? I know they will not tell me anything of worth, but I ask anyway, hoping that some response will be better than silence.
We will tell you, they croon. But you must come to us.
I'm not a fool. I rest my hand on my dagger, though doing so serves no practical purpose. I know your king, remember? You're as slippery as he is.
No tricks, liar, daughter of Mera. Unlike you, we do not fear the truth, for it is the truth that shall free us from our prison. And the truth shall free you from yours. Come to us.
Elias has never trusted the djinn. I shouldn't either. I know this. But Elias is not here, nor are the ghosts, and something is very wrong. Otherwise, he would be here. I need to get across the forest. There is no other path to Antium, to the Bloodshrike, to the last piece of the star. Standing here, agonizing over it, isn't going to do me any good. I make my way west, following the compass in my head, moving as swiftly as I can while it is still light out. Perhaps Elias is only away for a short time. Perhaps he will return. Or perhaps he doesn't know I'm here. Perhaps something has happened to him. Or, the djinn whisper,
he doesn't care. He has greater things to worry about than you.
They do not say it with malice. They simply state a fact, which makes it all the more chilling.
Our king showed you, did he not? You saw it in his eyes. Elias, walking away. Elias, choosing duty over you. He will not help you, liar. But we can. If you allow us, we will show you the truth.
Why would you help me? You know why I'm here. You know what I'm trying to do.
The truth shall free us from our prison, the djinn say again. As it will free you from yours. Let us help you.
Stay away from me, I say. The djinn falls silent. Do I dare hope that they will leave me be? A wind pushes at my back, ruffling my hair and pulling at my clothes. I jump, spinning, seeking the shadows for enemies. It is just wind. But as the night drags on, I flag, and when I can walk no more, I have no choice but to stop. A broad tree trunk serves as my shelter, and I hunker against it with my daggers in hand. The forest is strangely peaceful, and as soon as my body makes contact with the earth, the tree, I feel calmer, like I'm in a familiar place. It is not the familiarity of a well-traveled road. It is different, older, in my very blood. In the darkest hour of the night, sleep claims me, and with it, dreams. I find myself flying over the waiting place, skimming the treetops, incensed and yet terrified. My people. They are imprisoning my people. All I know is that I must get to them. I must reach them. If only I can... I awake to the overwhelming sense that something is wrong. The trees that surround me are not those I fell asleep beside. These trees are as wide as an Edison avenue, and they glow an eerie red, as if on fire from within.
Welcome to our prison, Lyre of Sarah.
The Nightbringer materializes from the shadows, speaking almost tenderly. He brushes his strangely glowing hands against the tree trunks as he circles them. They whisper a word at him, a word I cannot make out, but he silences them with his touch. You brought me here.
My brethren brought you. Be thankful they left you intact. They longed to tear you into a thousand pieces.
If you could kill me, you'd have done it already, I say. The star protects me.
Indeed, my love.
I recoil. Don't you call me that. You don't know what love is. His back was to me, but he turns now, immobilizing me with that eerily bright stare.
Ah, but I do.
His bitterness curdles the very air. It is so ancient.
For I was born to love. It was my calling, my purpose. Now it is my curse. I know love better than any other creature alive. Certainly better than a girl who gives her heart to whoever happens by.
Tell me where Elias is.
In such a hurry, Lyre. Just like your mother. Sit with my brethren a while. They have so few visitors.
You know nothing of my mother and father. Tell me where Elias is. My gorge rises as a Nightbringer speaks again. His voice feels too close, like he is forcing an intimacy I have not granted.
What will you do if I do not tell you where Elias is? Leave?
That is exactly what I'll do, I say, but my voice is weaker than I wish it to be. My legs feel strange, numb. Skies, I feel ill. I lean forward, and when my hands touch the earth, a jolt rolls through me. The word that comes to my mind is not the one I expect. Home.
The waiting place sings to you. It knows you, Lyre of Sarah.
Why? The Nightbringer laughs, and it is echoed by the djinn in the grove until it feels like it is coming from all sides.
It is the source of all magic in this world. We are connected to it, through it, to each other.
There is a lie here somewhere. I can sense it. But there is truth, too, and I cannot pass the fine lines between them.
Tell me, love.
The word sounds obscene in his mouth.
Have you had visions after using your magic?
My blood goes cold. The woman. The cell. You sent those visions, and you've been watching me.
In truth, you shall find freedom. Let me free you, Lyra of Sarah.
I don't need your truth. I want him out of my head, but he is as devious and slippery as an eel. Together with his brethren, he twists around my mind, squeezing tighter and tighter. Why did I let myself sleep? Why did I let the djinn take me? Get up, Lyra. Escape.
You cannot escape the truth, Lyra. You deserve to know, child. It has been kept from you for far too long. Where to begin? Perhaps where you began. With your mother.
No! The air before me wavers, and I do not know if the vision is real or in my head. My mother stands before me, big with child. Me, I realize. She paces back and forth outside a cottage as father speaks to her. The thickly forested mountains of Marin rise in the distance. We must go back, Jahan, she says, as soon as the child is born.
And bring him or her with us?
My father digs his hand into the thick, unruly hair that I inherited. Laughter rings out behind him. Darin, fat-cheeked and blissfully unaware, sits with a 7-year-old Lys. My heart twists at the sight of my sister. I have not seen her face in so long. Unlike Darin, she watches everything with careful eyes, her gaze flicking back and forth between mother and father. She is a child whose happiness is gauged by the strange weather between her parents, sometimes sunny, but more often a gale.
We can't expose them to that kind of danger.
Mirror, darkness. Smell comes to me before light. Apricot orchards and hot sands. I am in Sarah. My mother appears again, in leathers this time, a bow and quiver slung across her back. Her light hair is pulled back into a topknot, her stare fierce as she knocks upon a familiar weathered door. My father kneels behind her, holding me against one shoulder and Darin against the other. I am 4 years old. Darin is 6. Father kisses our faces over and over and whispers to us, though I cannot hear his words. When the door opens, Nan stands there, hands on her hips, so angry that I want to cry. Don't be angry, I want to tell her. You will miss her later. You will regret your anger. You will wish you had welcomed her with open arms. Nan catches sight of my father, of Darin, of me. She takes a step toward us. Darkness, and then an eerily familiar place. A dank room, a light-haired woman within, a woman I finally recognize. My mother. And the room is not a room. It is a prison cell.
The truth will free you from your illusions, Lyra of Sarah,
the Nightbringer whispers.
It will free you from the burden of hope.
I don't want it. The image of my mother won't go away. I don't want to be free. Just tell me where Elias is, I beg, a prisoner in my own mind. Let me go. The Nightbringer is silent. Torchlight bobs distantly, and the door to my mother's cell opens. Mother's bruises, her wounds, her hacked hair and emaciation are suddenly illuminated.
Are you ready to cooperate?
The winter in that voice is unmistakable. I will never cooperate with you. My mother spits at the feet of Keris Veturia. The commandant is younger, but just as monstrous. A high-pitched scream stabs into my ears, the scream of a child. I know who it is. Skies, I know. Lys. My sister. I writhe and scream myself to try to drown her out. I cannot see this. I cannot hear it. But the Nightbringer and his brethren hold me fast.
She doesn't have your strength, Keris says to mother. Nor does your husband.
He broke down, begged for death, begged for your death. No loyalty. He told me everything. He would never. Karis enters the cell. How little we know of people until we watch them break, until we strip them down to their smallest, weakest selves. I learned that lesson long ago, Mirror of Sarah. And so I will teach you. I will lay you bare, and I don't even have to touch you to do it. Another scream, this one deeper. A man's voice. They ask about you, the Commandant says. They wonder why you let them suffer. One way or another, Mera, you will give me the names of your supporters in Sarah. There is an unholy joy in Karis's eyes. I will bleed your family until you do. As she walks away, my mother roars at her, throwing herself against the door of her cell. Shadows move across the floor. A day passes, another. All the while, my mother listens to the sounds of Lys and father suffering. I listen. She grows more crazed. She tries to break out. She tries to trick the guards. She tries to murder them. Nothing works. The cell door opens, and the Koff guards drag my father in. I scarcely recognize him. He is unconscious as they toss him in a corner. Lys is next, and I cannot look at what Karis has done to her. She was just a child, only 12. Skye's mother, how did you stand it? How did you not go utterly mad? My sister shivers and curls up in the corner. Her silence, the slackness of her jaw, the emptiness in her blue eyes. They will haunt me until the day I die. Mother takes Lys in her arms. Lys doesn't react. Their bodies sway together as Mother rocks her. A star she came into my home and lit it bright with glory. Lys closes her eyes. My mother curls around her, her hands moving toward my sister's face, caressing it. There are no tears in Mother's eyes. There is nothing at all. A laughter like a gilded song, a rain cloud sparrow's story. My mother puts one of her hands on top of Lys's head, shorn now, and another on her chin. And when she sleeps, it's like the sun has faded, gone so cold, see? A crack sounds, softer than in my visions. It is a small noise, like the breaking of a bird's wing. Lys slips lifeless to the floor, her neck broken by our mother's hand. I think I scream. I think that sound, that shriek, is me. In this world? In some other? I cannot get out. I cannot escape this place. I cannot escape what I see. Mira, my father whispers. Lys, where is... Sleeping, my love. Mother's voice is calm, distant. She crawls to my father, pulling his head into her lap. She's sleeping now. I tried, but I don't know how much longer. Do not fear, my love. Neither of you will suffer any more. When she breaks my father's neck, it is louder. The quiet that follows sinks into my bones. It is the death of hope, sudden and unheralded. Still, the lioness does not cry. The Commandant enters, looks between the bodies. You're strong, Mera, she says, and there is something like admiration in her pale eyes. Stronger than my mother was. I would have let your child live, you know. My mother's head jerks up. Despair suffuses every inch of her. It wouldn't have been a life, she whispers. Perhaps, Karis says. But can you be sure? Time shifts again. The Commandant holds coals in a gloved hand as she approaches my mother, who is tied to a table. Far back in my mind, a memory surfaces. Ever been tied to a table while hot coals burned into your throat? Cook said those words to me long ago, in a kitchen at Blackcliff. Why did Cook say those words to me? Time speeds. Mother's hair goes from blonde to pure snow white. The Commandant carves scars into her face, horrible, disfiguring scars, until it is no longer the face of my mother, no longer the face of the lioness, but instead the face of... Ever had your face carved up with a dull knife while a mask poured salt water into your wounds? No. I do not believe it. Cook must have experienced the same thing as my mother. Perhaps it was the Commandant's particular way of getting rebel fighters to talk. Cook is an old woman, and my mother wouldn't be. She would still be relatively young. But Cook never acted like an old woman, did she? She was strong. The scars are the same. The hair. And her eyes. I never looked closely at Cook's eyes. But I remember them now, deep set and dark blue, darker still for the shadows that lurked within. But it cannot be. It cannot.
It is true, liar, the Nightbringer says, and my very soul shudders, for I know he tells no lies. Your mother lives. You know her. And now, you are free.
Chapter 40, Elias. How did someone get all the way to the gin grove without me knowing? The border walls should have kept outsiders away. But not, I realize, if they're thin and weak. Ghosts push against one spot, far to the east, and I slow down. Do I shore up the wall, move the ghosts? Their agitation is like nothing I've seen before, almost feral in its intensity. But if there is a human in the grove... Skies only know what they might be suffering at the hands of the djinn. I head for the interloper, and Martha pulls at me, his weight like an anvil chained to my legs. Ahead of me, ghosts attempt to block my path, a thick cloud that I can't see through.
We have her, Elias!
The djinn speak, and the ghosts stop their wailing. The sudden silence is unnerving. It's as if all the forest listens.
We have her, Elias, and we have torn her mind to shreds.
Who? I drag myself away from the ghosts, ignoring their cries and my Arthur's pull. Who do you have?
Come and see, usurper.
Did they somehow capture Mamie or Alfia? Dread grows in me like a weed, speeding my windwalking. Their machinations have already led to the suffering of Arborit's tribe, to Afia and Gibran being possessed by ghosts, to Mamie losing her brother, and hundreds of tribespeople dying. The Bloodshrike is too far away for them to hurt. Of all those I love, only the Shrike and one other have been spared their predations. But they cannot possibly have Lyra. She is in Edessa. Hunting for a way to stop the Nightbringer. Faster, Elias, faster! I battle Martha's draw, tearing through the increasingly frenzied ghosts until I reach the gin grove. At first, it looks as it always does. Then I see her, crumpled on the earth. I recognize the patchy gray cloak. I gave it to her long ago, on a night when I never could have imagined how much she'd one day mean to me. In the trees to the north, a shadow watches. Nightbringer! I leap for him, but he disappears, gone so fast that if not for his laugh on the wind, I'd have thought I'd imagined him. I am at Lyra's side in two steps, hardly believing she is real. The earth shudders more violently than it ever has before. Ma'atha is angry, but it does not matter to me. What in 10 bleeding hells have the djinn done to her? Lyra! I call to her, but when I look into her face, her gold eyes are far away, her lips parted dully. Lyra! I tip her head toward me. Listen to me! Whatever the Nightbringer said to you, whatever he and his ilk are trying to convince you of, it's a trick! A lie!
We do not lie! We told her the truth, and the truth has freed her. She will never hope again.
I need to get her mind out of their clutches.
How can you usurp her when you cannot lay your hands on the magic?
You tell me what the hells you've done to her!
As you wish.
Seconds later, my body is as rooted to the grove as Lyra's is, and the djinn show me her purpose in coming through the waiting place. She must get to Antium, to the Bloodshrike, to the Ring. She must stop the Nightbringer. But her mission is forgotten as a fire rages in her mind, leaving her lost, wandering in a prison, forced to watch what happened to her family over and over.
We show you her story so that you can suffer with her, Elias,
the djinn say.
Cry out your rage, won't you? Cry out your uselessness. The sound is so sweet.
My sins will do nothing against this. Threats will do nothing. The djinn are in her head. A powerful yank from Ma'atha nearly knocks me to my knees, so sharp that I gasp from the pain. Something is happening out in the waiting place. I can feel it. Something is happening to the border.
Leave her, then, Elias. Go and attend to your duty.
I will not leave her!
You have no choice, not if you wish the world of the living to survive.
I will not! My voice is raw with rage and failure. I will not let you torment her to death, even if stopping you tears my own body to shreds. All the world can burn, but I will not simply leave her to suffer!
All things have a price, Elias Vittorius. The price of saving her will haunt you for all your days. Will you pay it?
Just let her go. Please. I'm sorry for your pain, your hurt, but she did not cause it. It's not her fault. Martha, help me. Why am I begging? Why, when I know it will do no good? Only mercilessness can help me. Only abandoning my humanity, abandoning Lyra. But I can't do it. I can't pretend that I don't love her. Come back to me, Lyra! Her body is heavy in my arms, hair tangled, and I push it back from her face. Forget them and their lies. That's all they are. Come back!
Yes, Elias,
the djinn purr.
Pour your love into her. Pour your heart into her.
I wish they would shut the hells up. Come back to the world, wherever they have taken you. Whatever memory they have locked you in doesn't matter as much as you coming back. Your people need you. Your brother needs you. I need you. As I speak, it's as if I can see into her thoughts. I can see the djinn clawing at her mind. They are strange, warped beings of smokeless flame that are nothing like the beautiful, graceful creatures I saw in the city. Lyra tries to fight them, but she weakens.
You are strong, Lyra, and you are needed here.
Her cheek feels like ice.
You have much yet to do.
Lyra's eyes are glazed over, and I shudder. I hold her now. I call to her. But she will grow old and die, while I will live on. She is the blink of an eye, and I am an age. But I can accept that. I can survive long years without her, if I know that at least she had a chance at life. I'd give up my time with her. I would, if only she would wake.
Please, please come back.
Her body jerks once, and for one heart-stopping moment, I think she is dead. Then she opens her eyes, staring at me with bewilderment.
Thank the bleeding skies. They're gone, Lyra, I say. But we have to get you out of here.
Her mind will be fragile after what the djinn just put her through. Any more pushing from the ghosts or the djinn would feel torturous.
I can't walk. Could you?
Put your arms around my neck, I say, and I windwalk out of the grove with Lyra held close. Ma'atha yanks at me futilely, and the earth of the waiting place shakes and cracks. I reach out to the borders. The pressure is immense. The strain on them makes me break into a sweat. I need to get Lyra out of here so I can corral the ghosts, get them away from the edges of the waiting place, lest they break free.
Elias, Lyra whispers. Are you real? Are you a trick too?
No. I touch my forehead to hers.
No, love. I'm real. You're real. What's wrong with this place?
She shivers.
It's so full, as if it's about to burst. I can feel it.
Just the ghosts, I say. Nothing I can't handle. I hope. Flat patches of rolling grassland appear through the trees ahead. The Empire. The border feels even weaker now than it did when I first passed through it. Many of the ghosts have followed me, and they press against the glowing barrier, their cries rising eagerly as if they sense its weakness. I go well beyond the tree line and set Lyra down. The trees sway back and forth behind me, a frantic dance. I must return. But for just this one moment, I let myself look at her. The messy cloud of her hair, her worn boots, the tiny cuts on her face from the forest, the way her hands grip the dagger I gave her.
The djinn, she whispers. They told me the truth. But the truth is...
She shakes her head. The truth is ugly, I say. The truth of our parents uglier still. But we are not them, Lyra.
She's out there, Elias,
Lyra says. And I know she speaks of her mother, of Cook.
Somewhere. I...
She slips back into the memory again. And though the forest seethes behind me, it will have done me no good to get Lyra out of there if she ends up in the grasp of the djinn again. I take her shoulders, stroke her face. I make her look at me.
Forgive her, if you can, I say. Remember that fate is never what we think it will be. Your mother, my mother, we can never understand their torments, their hurts. We may suffer the consequences of their mistakes and their sins, but we should not carry them on our hearts. We don't deserve that.
Will it always be chaos for us, Elias? Will things never be normal?
Her eyes clear as she looks at me, and she is released, for a moment, from what she saw in the forest.
Will we ever take a walk by the moonlight, or spend an afternoon making jam, or making...
Love. My body turns to fire just thinking about it.
I had dreams about you,
she whispers.
We were together.
It wasn't a dream. I pull her close. It kills me that she doesn't remember. I wish she could. I wish she could hold on to that day the way I do. I was there, and you were there. And it was a perfect slice of time. It won't always be like this. I say it like I believe it, but within my own heart, something has shifted. I feel different, colder. The change is great enough that I speak even more adamantly, hoping that by saying what I want to feel, I will bring it to life. We will find a way, Lyra, somehow. But if I change, if I seem different, remember that I love you. No matter what happens to me, say you'll remember, please.
Your eyes.
She looks up at me, and my breath catches at the intensity in her gaze.
They're darker, like shavers.
I can't stay. I'm sorry. I have to go back. I have to attend to the ghosts. But I will see you again. I vow it. Hurry. Get to Antium.
Wait.
She stands, still unsteady on her feet.
Don't go. Please, don't leave me here.
You're strong, I say. You are Lyra of Serra. You are not the lioness. Her legacy, her sins, they don't belong to you any more than Kerris's legacy belongs to me.
What did you say to me?
Lyra asks.
That night before you left, months ago, when we were headed to Koth, I was sleeping in the wagon with Izzy. What did you say?
I said, you are. But Ma'atha has lost patience. I am rested back to the waiting place, back to Ma'atha's side, with a force that rattles my bones.
I will find you, Lyra. I will find a way. This is not our end.
I scream it in my mind. But as soon as I get into the waiting place, the thought is dashed from my consciousness. The borders are bending, breaking. I go to reinforce them, but I am a cork in the face of a dam breaking.
All things have a price, Elias Veturius.
The djinn speak again, an inexorable truth in their voice.
We want you.
A roar cleaves the waiting place, a ripping that seems to come from the bowels of the earth. The ghosts scream, their high keen rising as they throw themselves against the border. I have to stop them. They're too close. They'll break free.
Too late, usurper! Too late!
A collective howl goes up, and the ghosts of the waiting place, the tortured souls who are my sworn duty, break free of the border and pour into the world of the living. Their shrieks, like living death, carried on the wind.
Chapter 41. The Bloodshrike. I'm not going to the Augurs, I say to Marcus. I remember well what Cain told me just weeks ago.
I will see you once more, before your end.
You don't understand. They
grow a bleeding spine, Shrike.
Marcus grabs my arm and begins to drag me from the throne room.
Those eerie bastards scare everyone. We have an invasion to worry about, and they can see the future. You're coming with me to their foul little cave, unless you want to find out if you really can heal your sister's shattered kneecaps.
Damn you. He backhands me and grimaces, grabbing his head. I wipe the blood from my mouth and look around as he mutters to himself. The throne room is empty, but there are still guards nearby.
Pull yourself together, I hiss.
We don't need Karras hearing about this. Marcus takes a steadying breath and glowers at me.
Shut it.
The softness of his growl does nothing to lessen its menace.
And move.
The pilgrims usually clogging the trail to Mount Videns have fled,
ordered back down to the city to prepare for Grammar's approach. The path up to the Augur's